sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Way to go, Stan. Nice shot.
Why, thank you, John. I appreciate that. There's nothing better than a sink a beagle.
I'm John Krolinski.
I am Stan Hudson. We want to welcome you to this week's episode of
Sink the Beagle, where we take lighthearted looks at serious issues involving evolution and creation. Lighthearted because we know no other way, but we do think that the topic sometimes warrants some serious evaluation.
Well, lighthearted connects well to lightheaded, and that's where we are.
That's where we are
gifted.
Today. Very well gifted. Well, Stan, we just some recent news that has come across the scientific email wires. Thank you for that nice soundtrack.
News.
And the question is, in this article, coming off the Ananova website, says, is there life on Jupiter's moon?
You know, I've often wondered that.
How are you going to figure that out?
Well, how?
This call, Stan, for an astrobiologist.
Ah, an astrobiologist. And believe it or not, listeners, there is such a thing as astrobiology.
I'll be one.
I want to be one.
Oh, okay. I'm going to give you the final example, final test. Okay, you ready to take your final test in astrobiology, Dr.
Sure,
Hudson?
Sure, Professor.
You'll have a double doctoral degree then.
Okay.
From Sink the Beagle University. Your honorary doctorate in astrobiology begins with this test.
S-B-A.
How many known life forms have we confirmed that exist outside planet Earth?
Outside planet Earth?
Yes. List them.
Is there like a green man or something? Spock.
No. The real answer was zero.
Zero. Okay.
Do you want to do a retake?
Boy. So if there are zero life forms that we're absolutely sure of...
That's how you get your astrobiology degree.
I want to study those things that have not been proven to exist yet.
Yeah, but
and I want a doctorate in it.
That's okay. Exactly what the degree about amounts to. It's trying to search in a more, quote, serious scientific vein,
that
before we poke too much more fun at them and they want to strangle us.
Mm-hmm.
What they're doing is they found on the surface of Jupiter's moon Europa, they think there's the best chance of finding signs of life on a distant world. They must be giving up on Mars a little bit, is my opinion.
Well, they like Jupiter's moons, and Europa seems to have perhaps the best possibilities for life. Now, remember, these scientists think that life sort of generated from non-living matter, abiogenesis, and so they're looking for places where it could kind of spring up.
Well,
and Europa looks good. And why does Europa look
good?
Well,
Europa, they say there's some domes on Europa, 4 miles
domes.
Wide, 300 feet high,
kind
of like the Astrodome,
Superdome. Maybe they play football in those
domes.
I don't know.
Well, actually, they're formed from bubbles of ice pushing up from the warm currents of Europa's deep interior.
Oh, they're great big bubbles.
Kind of percolating.
And what's inside the bubbles? That's what they're wondering, huh?
The excited scientists think that there might be life inside those encrusted ocean bubbles that cover their moon.
Encrusted, huh? With ice, I
suppose. Well, the surface is kind of a frozen wasteland, really, Stan, so they don't think they're on the surface. You have to dig for them.
So there's the interior of the planet must be providing some heat to kind of cause some of this, and if you got heat and you've got some liquids, maybe water,
I suppose,
we all know that life came from the oceans.
Nothing.
Nothing. Wet nothing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason why they think these things is that they think that Jupiter's gravity causes so much compression and pressure, a stranglehold on these moons, which actually leads to sort of a liquidy water underworld currents that swizzle around inside those moons there.
Okay.
And as a result of all this squeezing and contortions, there's like underwater tidal currents that flow throughout the moon. Underneath this crusty surface.
And just remember that the mindset of these scientists is that, recreate the conditions that cause life to spring forth here on this planet.
Yeah, thus proving evolution.
somewhere else. If it's going on, then there may very well be life there. In this particular case, of course, it's going to be beneath the surface, so you're going to have to go there, I suppose, and dig it up. Huh?
Yeah, well, yeah, you have to, you know, they think that there's a salty water world underneath. They don't know. I don't know why they say it's salty.
How? Well, okay.
Unless they went and licked it.
How far down do they have to dig? Is it a foot deep, or according to this article, it's going to be kind of thin.
Well, the surface ice is 13 miles thick.
Ooh, that's a thick bubble, boy.
It's going to take a team of astrobiologists to dig through that bubble.
A team of astrobiologists. Well, can you just see them?
With shovels. Here we are.
Astro-shovelers. Okay.
Astro-shoveler. Hey, that's a new... We don't want to offend the blue-collar shoveler here, the common meat and potatoes, bucket, you know, lunch to... You know, to work kind of man, we'll put you on the team too.
That's right. And 13 miles thick. So, I mean, is there any way in which this is sort of a kind of a nice mental image to sort of play around with? But is there any way in which you can test for this in a, you know, 13 miles?
No, but you can theorize like crazy.
Okay. It makes really for interesting reading. And that's, of course, why we're here today.
That's why we're here, to help you get. And what they think, though, what might happen, though, since it's hard to find, maybe these ice bubbles could have carried life forms. Because you can't have life on the surface, unfortunately, of the moon because there's just way, way, way too much radiation out there.
Okay.
I mean, Mr. Sun is not really helping life on the surface. It's cooking everything.
Okay. So you put it back a few more million miles and maybe, huh?
Yeah, maybe. Or you can just, if they can get some that can just be below the surface, like just maybe two or three shovel digs.
Well, Professor Robert Pappalardo from the University of Colorado in Boulder, where you and I were not too long ago.
That's a bunch of rocks there.
Said this, we are excited about our research because we think it is now possible that any present or past life, or even just the chemistry of the ocean, may be lifted to the surface, forming these domes.
I mean, when you think, stop and think, Stan, for a minute. Anything. Come on, just throw us a bone, would you, Mr. Universe? If you just throw us a bone, we can prove evolution here on Earth if we can just find a bone outside the Earth. Because, to be honest with you, what they're really admitting here in this article is they really can't prove that life evolved here on Earth or create the conditions where it probably happened. And that is why they're spending lots of your tax dollars to try to find life in outer space still.
So far, no good. The probes that have been sent to Mars... were sent with great optimism and hope, but nothing was found.
Coming back with great pessimism.
With great pessimism and this, yes, discouragement.
That giant sound is the deflation of their egos as these things keep striking out.
Either that or the corporate pocketbooks of taxpaying America, who's paying for these things. It would be nice, you know, and you and I joke about it at times, of why billions of dollars are being spent to try to prove evolution where that money might be useful in other areas. But anyway, that's sort of a political talk we'll hold for another time.
Yeah.
But is there a possibility, John, from a biblical standpoint, can we take it in a different direction? Are we alone? Is there intelligent life on Earth? I mean, on other planets.
On other planets outside? Well, Stan,
other planets.
The Bible does indicate that there seems to be at least life above or beyond, and there might even be, actually, we have sort of a torpedo text we might want to dive into to help explore this topic in a little more depth, and it depends how you want to translate the text. You have a couple there. Why don't you share one with us?
All right. Well, let's start with one that's a quick read, and you have to wonder about it. We'll do a little exegesis here, though. It says, in Hebrews, the beginning of Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, it says, God, who at sundry times and in diverse manners spake in time past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken to us by his Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the worlds.
Ooh.
Plural. So okay. Worlds is an interesting verse. What in the world is, pardon the pun, is he talking about there when he says, hath made the worlds?
Well, he could either be talking, the word there in the Greek is aeon, which is an unusual word in some respects, because it could also be translated ages. He made the ages, and that's kind of an odd verse too when you talk about creating ages, but it also exalts Jesus as the creator of all things.
Yes.
So you have in the text, you have a kind of conflict. Is he talking more about time past or the various sundry times that he had spoken, or is he talking about the God who made all the things that exist?
whichever way you go, it does kind of open the door. Now, if you look at some other Bible verses, let me run another one past our listeners. This is found in Isaiah 45.
Don't run them over, though. Careful.
I'll try to be careful. This is Isaiah 45:18. For thus saith the Lord that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth and made it. He hath established it. He created it not in vain. He formed it to be inhabited.
Oh. So he doesn't want to make things just tohu, just dead out there.
There's our friendly Hebrew word tohu. You know, in the beginning, God created
tohu,
the earth.
Tohu, bohu, willy-nilly, topsy-turvy.
Right. Everything was tohu and bohu.
Unformed, unfilled.
Unfilled. And this is unformed. So he hath established it. He created it not to remain tohu or unformed.
So God has abilities to create life wherever he wants. That's, of course, within his prerogative, since he's God, according to the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be a hint here that there might be more, that if he's made more worlds, there could be truly life out there that the astrobiologists haven't discovered, because the Lord's not letting them show up.
It would seem like the verse would hint that God creates things for purposes, not just to have rocks to look at in space, but rather he may have greater purposes, and in many cases, perhaps creating worlds to be inhabited.
And we just don't know all of his purposes yet.
We don't. Now, if you look at other places in the Bible, whether it's the heavens, host of heavens, the sons of the morning sang at the creation of the earth, whether you look at the famous chapter in Job 1, where there's a heavenly council of the sons of God, apparently some kind of a judicial type, some kind of governmental sons of God, whoever they were, and in that setting, it was Lucifer, Satan, who came and presented himself perhaps as a representative of Earth among some kind of a planetary council thing going on. Whatever you think here, there's a reasonable belief that there may be other worlds, other planets, in which you would think about it, John, if we are the fallen world, if we're the one where Lucifer is loose. It says war in heaven, and Lucifer was cast
like
on
quarantine.
This earth. Yeah, we're quarantined because he's cast on this earth. He's not cast to where he can go everywhere. He's only cast on this earth, and his angels are cast here too. It makes you wonder, you know, we're probably the news item on the universe broadcasting
system. They're all watching what's going on here, and they're trying to see what are you doing, God, and why is this allowed to happen, and understanding a little bit more about not just the power of our God, but really seems to be at the core of the issue when you study the Bible, is about the character of our God is the thing on trial.
Absolutely.
It's not like he can do it or can't do it. That's not the issue. He made worlds. He made the universe. Obviously, there are other beings out there,
principalities
and powers,
thrones.
But what's really on trial is it really a great place to live? And I think he's trying to prove that. And of course, that kind of it sparked another text in my mind, because the question we opened up the program just for all of our astrobiologists is there life on Jupiter? But the real question is there life here on Earth, real life? Because the Bible says, he that hath the sun hath life.
That's right.
In other words, you could be dead man walking, you know, so to speak.
Let the dead bury the dead, Jesus said once.
And then he was talking about live people at the time. And so
the real
life isn't just having the right chemicals, being in the right gravitational fields or bubbling and percolating up under some saltwater dome as a microbe. Real life involves at least is having the power of God existing in your life and having Christ as your known Savior and Lord.
That's right. So real life is to be connected with Jesus. To have Jesus is to have life, whatever planet you're on.
And so we invite you to embrace him, and hope you'll listen in another week for another fun-filled episode of
Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time for Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.